get the local view to open a Tuesday. He's the columnist for the Register Guard. See what he's up to in the sports section. If you missed, hit up registerguard.com. On Twitter, it's at Austin Meek RG. Austin, how's it going?
Hey, Steve, I'm doing good. How are you?
All right. Last time I saw you up on Press Row, you had been through a lot. You had traveled a lot. You had added a member of your family. So belated congratulations, a new daughter. How are mom and baby and all of you doing?
Well, we are all doing great. A little bit sleep deprived, but if that's your biggest complaint, then you've got a lot to be thankful for. My daughter... Marinie is her name. She was born last Friday. Her timing was perfect. She let us have our Thanksgiving dinner at home on Thursday. She showed up Friday night, and then by Saturday I was pulling into Autzen Stadium about 5 minutes before kickoff to cover the Civil War, so the timing all worked out pretty well.
Wow. She already understands how critical it is, her role in your profession. That's
well, and you know, that 69-10 thriller, if I had not been there, I would have regretted it the rest of my life.
What would have become of us?
Yeah.
Actually, that game, the most lopsided ever, it started with the Beaver coach providing bulletin board material. Then, I don't understand, as the butt-whipping progressed, some OSU players were chirping. You wrote about it after. The Ducks made no bones about it. A bad team running their yap kind of ticked them off.
Well, it did. You know, I'm all for any attempt to spice up a rivalry, especially one like this that, you know, until last year had been pretty lopsided, but the combination of Oregon State winning the game last year and then some of the comments made by their coach and some of their players leading up to the game, I think that's part of what makes college football fun, part of what makes rivalries intense, but you got to be able to back it up. And if, you know, if you spend all week talking and then you come out and lose by 50, you end up looking pretty bad. And it's obvious that those comments became fuel on the fire for Oregon. You know, Ducks were already going to be fired up after what happened last year, but just hearing that stuff and, you know, having the week to kind of stew about it, they didn't say a lot about it publicly leading up to the game, but then after the game, they just let it rip. You know, one guy after another up there talking about the raincoats and, you know, how they took that as motivation, and, you know, the guys putting on the raincoats after the game. They had some fun with it. Probably a learning experience for Corey Hall. If he's ever in that position again as a head coach, he may choose his words a little more carefully.
I think so. But as for the Ducks, after the Washington loss, they had the bye. There was hope that Justin Herbert would come back. They would become bowl eligible. That's what happened. And, of course, not everyone focuses on the past two wins. I've heard some what might have been. Is that kind of logical, though, seeing how they played the last 2 weeks, just wondering, with a healthy Herbert, what 2017 could have been?
Yeah, I think the curse of this season is, in a way, is that we're never going to know how good this team really was, because when they played the best teams on their schedule, they didn't have their quarterback. What would Oregon have done against Stanford and Washington and Washington State if they'd had Justin Herbert? It's possible they would have gone 0-3 like they did with Braxton Burmeister. It's possible they would have won one of those games or two of them. We just don't know. We'll never know. You know, the sad thing about this season is, you know, we never got a chance to see Oregon at full strength against the best competition. The teams they beat, for the most part, you know, when Oregon was at full strength, they were playing the teams on their schedule who weren't very good.
Right.
So I think we all feel like this Oregon team maybe had the potential to be better than 7-5 if Justin Herbert had been healthy the whole way. But how much better? It's hard to say.
But I need an exact answer, because that's logical. Talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard, obviously, facing an offense like Oregon State helped, but this defense kept Khalil Tate in a box. And even when the numbers look bad, to me, they just always competed, played hard. So with the regular season done, thinking how last year ended, how much praise should we heap on Jim Leavitt, his staff, and his guys for how they performed in 2017?
I think that was a huge key for Willie Taggart. To get his defensive coordinator right. You know, that was one thing, and I've said one thing that I feel like really doomed Mark Helfrich was he just never got the defensive coordinator right after Nick Aliotti retired. Well, in his first shot, Willie Taggart went out and hired, I think, maybe the best guy available. And it's translated better than I think anybody realistically could have hoped. I thought, you know, if Jim Leavitt can just get this team from being, you know, ranked 115 out of 120 or however many FBS teams there are, if you could just get that up to, you know, top 60 maybe, that'd be a huge improvement. And he exceeded that. I think they're now in the top 40 or right around that,
yep,
that place. So, man, that's a huge jump in 1 year for a defense that's playing, you know, a lot of the same guys and a lot of freshmen. You know, it's pretty impressive to make that kind of leap. And it just shows you how important it is to get that defensive coordinator higher right.
Well, I would say they got a home run hit there for sure. Let's talk about the guy who used to coach here, Chip Kelly, introduced as the new UCLA coach. I would say this league is barely recognizable compared to when he was here from 2009 to 2012 as the head coach. So, splash higher, and I think I saw you wrote, and I'm kind of with you, no lock he's going to repeat the success he had here. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I felt that way last year when people were talking about the possibility of Chip Kelly coming back to Oregon. Like, yeah, that could, you know, that could work, but I don't think it's any guarantee that he's going to come back to the Pac-12 and just turn things upside down the way he did the first time. That was just a pretty special moment in time, and a lot of factors came together for that Chip Kelly phenomenon to happen the first time. It didn't happen for him in the NFL. He's going to get another chance now in the Pac-12. At minimum, I think Chip Kelly going to UCLA means that there is now a school in L.A. along with USC that everybody's going to have to reckon with. UCLA now is, you know, is a force that everybody's going to pay attention to in a way that they weren't with Jim Mora. And I think the two schools it affects the most, you know, obviously UCLA and Oregon. And I think right or wrong now, what Chip Kelly does at UCLA is going to be compared against what Willie Taggart does going forward at Oregon. And if Chip Kelly comes to Autzen Stadium next year and beats the Ducks and has UCLA in a New Year's Six bowl game, and Oregon is 7-5 again, a lot of people are going to be unhappy with that.
Well,
but the flip side, and I think this is absolutely possible, Chip Kelly could come to Autzen Stadium next year. Oregon could kick his butt. Oregon could be the team winning 10 games next year. Maybe UCLA is 7-5. A lot of Oregon fans are going to be thinking, you know, maybe we dodged a bullet there. We hired the right guy. We've got our coach, and we're happy to let UCLA have Chip Kelly.
Well, that would be November 3rd, a Saturday. If Chip Kelly comes here and kicks Oregon's rear end, I'm going to have a guest host in on Monday because I don't even know if I want to deal with that.
Yeah, this town will be in flames if that occurs.
You know, we will know where they're bowling next week. We'll talk about that. But right now, at the top of the hour, another selection committee ranking as we get ready for the fourth college football playoff. We had the 1 and 2 get knocked off this week, and those looming. So heading into a championship week, how do you see the top 4? And any chance we're going to see a 2-loss team, maybe Auburn or Ohio State in?
Well, I think there's a good chance that we will, and that would be the first time in the playoff era that has happened. If Auburn wins the SEC championship, Auburn's in. I think Ohio State, it's a lot more complicated. But, you know, as I look at the playoff, it could end up being really simple, or it could end up being really complicated. You know, I think the ACC champ is in.
Yep.
You know, you can pencil Clemson in there. I think Oklahoma is in if they win. Wisconsin obviously is in if they win. And I think either Auburn or Georgia, the winner of that game, is in. So if the favorites take care of business on Saturday, I think it's pretty clear cut. But history tells us that there's usually at least one big upset on championship Saturday. And so, you know, we could see this whole thing thrown into flux. And what happens if TCU beats Oklahoma? What happens if Ohio State beats Wisconsin? Do you put Ohio State in there with two losses? You know, I think it could end up being really messy for the selection committee, and I'm guessing they're hoping that the chalk prevails and it ends up being a pretty clear-cut bracket.
Yeah, we'll hold our breath for that one. They'll have to do that final selection show from a bunker somewhere. Let's move to Duck Hoops, talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard over the holiday weekend, the PK80 tournament. You hit on some of the Blue Blood programs, Hall of Fame coaches. I thought it was kind of interesting. Many think Nike in college sports, and the first default is Duck football. But as we learned, and I'll tell you the truth, I never thought about it, but of all the guys you talked to and got quotes from, his impact and that company's impact on basketball is a monster.
Yeah, the origin of Nike's influence in college basketball goes back about 40 years to a guy named Sonny Vaccaro, you know, back when Nike was just trying to get into college basketball as a way to get in with players before they got to the NBA. You know, Nike was having trouble signing NBA players because the players already had commitments from when they were in college. So Nike came up with this plan to pay the coaches to have the teams wear Nike and develop these relationships with college basketball coaches, and then outfit the entire team. And so it's developed as kind of a special group over time. You know, the Nike basketball coaches, there's just sort of a little bit of prestige that goes along with being in that club. And all the coaches we saw in Portland last week at the PK80 are part of that. The Roy Williams and Tom Izzo and Mike Krzyzewski. And you know, those guys have stories going back decades with Phil Knight and Nike. So it's interesting to hear those guys talking about it. And, you know, there was a little bit of irony in the fact that here we are throwing this huge tournament to honor, a head of a shoe company at the time that college basketball is embroiled in this big scandal about, you know, paying players and the influence of shoe companies. And I don't think that irony was lost on anybody. But if you talk to the coaches, they'll certainly say that the influence of Phil Knight and Nike has done more to grow the game than just about anybody else, and outweighs whatever downsides have come because of the involvement of the shoe company.
No, it was interesting stuff that I wasn't really aware of. As for the performance of the Ducks, you know, if they beat UConn, they could have played Michigan State. They lost. They beat DePaul. They played a decent Oklahoma team, came up short. Some said it was disappointing. With all their youth and turnover, is it more logical to just say, hey, look, we just don't know, and for the time being, you got to just look at this team as a work in progress?
You do. I mean, I'm gonna go with disappointing. I think they should have beaten UConn. You know, we talked about that last week, about if you can just get the first game, then you're playing Michigan State, and everything from there is kind of playing with house money. But I don't think UConn's very good. That's a game they should have won. I think when you look back at Oregon's resume at the end of the season, you're going to see that UConn loss in there and go, yeesh, that's a game they should have won. Very similar to Maui last year, you know, and if you want to be encouraged about it, I think you look at the fact that, hey, Dana Altman's teams have never played great in November. It's just not the track record. You know, they take some time to develop, and when Dana's teams really start finding their stride is in February and March, and that's when you want to be playing good. You know, you don't want to play good in November and play bad in March. So, you know, I'm not going to freak out about it, but I think it was disappointing because they had an opportunity to get you know, a couple decent games on their resume that they didn't get.
And finally, this mess at Tennessee. Greg Schiano, who was mentioned in two sentences of that Sandusky investigation by a guy, Mike McQueary, who kind of failed miserably to do the right thing. Schiano about to be hired, a lot of protests. To me, there's a lot of angles here, the toxic nature of Nittany Lion football during that period. But was Schiano wrongly targeted? I mean, we could have probably done the whole segment about this. What do you make of this unique, awkward situation?
Well, it's bizarre. I've never seen anything quite like this. And, you know, we've talked before about John Curry, the AD at Tennessee, was at Kansas State when I was there, so I know John fairly well. And, look, he's a good AD. He's a smart guy. He's got his strengths and weaknesses like everybody else. I would say one of his weaknesses is, you know, he's very concerned about public perception, maybe to a fault.
Right.
And so I'm sure he was absolutely mortified when that backlash started happening around Greg Schiano. In some ways, I think it was a failure on his part to anticipate that fans at Tennessee weren't going to be thrilled about hiring a guy whose most recent college experience was at Rutgers and who failed in the NFL. When Greg Schiano's name came up for the Oregon job last year, I certainly didn't hear anybody saying, "Oh, that's definitely the guy we want." It's not a sexy hire. And so to some extent, I think he could have anticipated the backlash. Now, the fact that the Penn State allegations would become part of it, I don't know that that's something that anybody could, you know, anticipated to that degree, and I think there was definitely some exploitation of that by people who maybe didn't like the hire,
yep,
and just wanted a reason to try to blow it up, basically. So it turned into a really toxic situation. That, you know, for me, if I'm the AD making that hire, I feel like you got to have the conviction to say, "Look, we vetted this guy, we interviewed him, we feel like we know him. I don't care what they're saying on talk radio. I don't care how the fans feel. We think this is our guy. We're going to go with him. And in 2 years, if he's winning 10 games a year, nobody's going to remember. Everybody's going to be happy." To me, you got to have the conviction to stick with it as opposed to changing course because there's a backlash.
Nope. One of the most uniquely uncomfortable, awkward situations I've ever come across. Folks, he's Austin Meek, the Register Guard. On Twitter, use the handle at AustinMeekRG. Austin, enjoy your week, your family, and we shall chat again on Tuesday.
All right, sir. Sounds good. Thank you.
Take it easy.